Hey everyone, this week we have a special interview with Luis Bermudez. He plays Kona in Final Fantasy XIV Dontro. We talk about Latino representation in the voice acting industry, in games, and the importance that Kona brings to Dontro's main quest scenario as a brother and as somebody who's learning more about himself. Enjoy!
My name is Luis Bermudez. I am very fortunate to be the voice of Kona in Dontrail. I'm also very lucky to be the voice of Blanca in Street Fighter VI, and other things that I can't possibly remember right at this moment. I've been very lucky to have a pretty stable career as a voice actor full-time for the last 3 years, living in Las Vegas, working hybrid remote, and then making a six-hour drive when the moment arises for work in Los Angeles.
Awesome. I am very happy I got to talk to you, very specifically because Kona turned into a character. I was like, who is this green-haired man? Who is he? What is he doing here? And then I feel like he has a really strong journey that I think a lot of Latinos, a lot of immigrants, I think in general, can feel of leaving your home, coming back to it and wanting to change everything about it, but learning along the way. Can you tell me a little bit about what resonates between you and the character? Since I shared what resonated with me a whole bunch.
First of all, I was inspired by In the Heights. No,
his real name's Usnavi.
There's a boat, the name, it's an interesting story. No, I mean, so much of who the character is. I mean, I feel like a lot of us can empathize with somebody who leaves their country to acquire resources or tool sets from somewhere else that he's just not able to get where he's based at. And he sees this world that he lives in kind of moving into the future in a lot of areas that he wants to kind of bring to his home country. And when he comes back, he's kind of lost in the sauce of that a little bit. And by the time he returns, he's kind of forgotten why he went out there. And instead he's just like angry at how far behind his own culture is. And so he has this really interesting journey, which I won't spoil because incorrectly when I made the announcement, I was like, the embargo was lifted. It was not lifted. Everyone was very upset with me. when he comes back, he gets this great journey that he gets to go through where he learns that maybe his culture is different from the world beyond, but there are things he can introduce to improve the quality of life that his people have without necessarily stripping away the importance of their culture and their beliefs and their ideals. And it's a really beautiful story, man. I myself am a younger brother, not an older brother, but I'm a brother, and I have absolutely thrown down to protect my sisters You know, it's something that was incredibly close to me, and when I was offered to play him, my biggest concern was like, let me do this as honestly and as truthfully as possible, because if it's not any of those things, then I'm gonna be a guy with, frankly, an odd vocal type for this character, that also is delivering something that's just not sincere, and so that was my main concern, and I'm glad that it seems people enjoyed it.
I will say, I was a little touch and go on the character at first, but there was a very specific scene in the early parts of Dontrail where he's talking with the Warrior of Light, our character, about Uklamat and his need to take care of her and what it was like to have her come home and what he want and kind of having that awakening in him. And I did not cry, but I would be a liar if I didn't say that I didn't like get a little like, because I'm an older sister, I'm an older child, I'm somebody who also similarly would throw it down to protect my sibling. And I did want to ask, like, what is it as a voice actor to create that level of vulnerability that he has in that moment, but also that ferocity and that strength that he has in that moment as well?
it's It's a lot of waiting for this moment as an actor, I think, that kind of came through because my career has, like I said, I've been very lucky to have a full-time career for the last 3 years that I've been doing this professionally. But you don't get dialogue like that often. And for as far as like localization goes, this is one of the most beautiful scripts I've ever been handed. And so when I saw the words that I had the pleasure of reading, I was just like, oh, someone cooked here. Let me pay homage. And so when it's that easily, when it's done that well, it's easy to just kind of connect. I've worked really hard to get to a place in my level of performance, I guess, that it's less about performing the emotion and more about just drawing from wherever that real place and that real connection comes from. And for me, it was drawing from a place of like wanting so bad to just do well, to be in a place where I can provide for the people that I love and I care about, and take as much off of their plate and their shoulders as humanly possible. When I was growing up, my dad was not the best guy. And so he bailed and he kind of left me and my sisters and my mom with like not a lot of resources and a whole lot of trauma. And so the thing I heard a lot when I was a kid was, "You're the man of the house," which is heavy for like a 7-year-old. And so it's I took it on very like literally, like when things happened that I perceived as slights towards my home, I took them very personally. And I was also a very angry young kid because of a lot of things that were going on in my life. So that bubbling kind of simmering anger, which I think Kona has in a few scenes, he's a very controlled character. But there's a couple of times where he does kind of let go of those reins and let that stuff that's bubbling under the surface kind of come out. And that was very easy for me to just kind of tap into because that's my existence, baby. So yeah, it was a joy to get to kind of express that through him.
And when Don Cheadle first got announced, I was screaming. I was so excited because I could see Mesoamerica, I could see the Andean culture, I could see the Aztecs and the Maya, I could see a lot of pieces of histories that are so full and rich and welcome to be adapted into new mythologies and fantasies. But I was worried about the voice casting. And only because video games and adapting Asian media in general hasn't always had the best track record. And so when I started looking through the cast list, I was blown away with how authentically it was cast and why those accents did not set off any alarm bells. But I was like, oh, I've heard that before. I know that this is true. And I wanted to ask what it's like to be a part of a project like this. And do you feel it has an impact on folks? Has it had an impact on you?
Oh my God, yeah. I mean, I think those first few days, like recording for Kona, were. I mean, before I even get to like just recording for Kona, coming in and recording for the characters that I was recording for initially, they were so well written, and like there was truly no like cannon fodder. There was no chaff. It was all just quality stuff, and they really did their homework, and that is, I think, testament to Kate Quiner and like their entire localization team. They really wanted to do their homework and really wanted to do this right and not just adopt a Mesoamerican skin or like, hey, Azteca stuff looks kind of cool. Like, let's plaster that everywhere. And it's like, okay, but some of that has a meaning that you're not really understanding what it means. And they really cared, and that comes down from Yoshi P. Like it was, he even wanted to make sure that it was as authentic of a representation as possible. And then the localization team just took it and ran, which was awesome to see. And then Yeah, man, when I saw the cast list, I was really excited because a lot of my friends were in that. A lot of people that I came up with, Musa Medina, Jesse Alexander, I mean, Senna, obviously. Like, there are so many people that I came up with that, like, I have had these conversations of just like, yeah, I'm playing another guy named Miguel, and he says weird Spanish operatives in places that don't make sense, and I've got to basically rewrite the whole script. And, it's as lovely as it is to represent my culture through my art, there's also there's also plenty of times where it's like, okay,
Yeah.
this character was written very two-dimensionally, or frankly one-dimensionally. And like, they were just like accent when they sat down to write the paper, and I was like, good job, buddy. You got accent. Cool. Good for you. But with Kona, he was a human being. He was fully realized and like had flaws and goals and gross things about him and beautiful things about him, and
Yeah.
like there was so much dimensionality. It was amazing to see. And all the characters are written that way, down from like Gerfler, which is like could easily just be like somebody who they just like took a sound mixer and did God knows what to, but
Yeah.
he's this ancient being who has real hopes and dreams for his people, and like
Yeah.
wants them to be respected. And like, when they show up to like cause all this riffraff, he's like, yo, not in my house, knock it off. You do that in the jungles with the lizard people, you get out of here with that nonsense. It's lovely, man. It's awesome to see, because we don't really, I mean, even when stuff is like made almost demonstrably for us, it's
Yeah.
still like touch and go, and it's weird.
Yes.
And it's frankly weird to see like white people do it so well, but they did it. They really did. I mean, I'm really
Yeah.
surprised.
No, I mean, I completely agree. And I think there was a tweet. I actually think it was you who posted talking about wanting to be seen as a really good voice actor, not just being seen as a really good Latino voice actor. And that really resonated with me because I think you kind of hit the nose on the head as if even if something is for us or we're being called in to do something for us, you can tell when it's not authentic. I mean, I feel that in the podcast, if I get asked to guest on a show and it's like, well, you're only gonna guest if we're talking about the brown people stuff. And it's like, okay.
Yeah. You show
Happy
up to
to
a
be
panel of
here,
five other
happy to
white
do it.
people.
Exactly. Yes. And we kind of see it and we feel it. And I think from a player's perspective, I was a little guard up with the characters at first because like this is what we're gonna get. And I wanted to kind of ask a little bit like how it feels for you within your larger career. I mean, you've kind of touched on it a little bit of what those casting calls look like. Do you feel that you have more agency and freedom in choosing roles because it's voice first, or do you feel that there's still some of the same walls that get built up for on-camera acting as well?
I feel like the walls have shifted in dimension and size, and like maybe before it was like a looser, a tighter sieve that we were kind of squeezing
Yeah.
ourselves through, but it's we're running into a lot of the same issues,
Yeah.
where it's like we're casting everything authentically, but memories are short, and
Yeah.
I can come in and absolutely crush a session, and people are clapping me on the shoulder like I just saved the president afterwards. And then, something else comes up down the line, and it's like, where was my call for that? Or where, why wasn't I considered for this, or XYZ? And I think in a lot of places, there's a lot of earnest, honest to God, like, attempts being made.
Yes.
There are people who are really trying hard to just like understand everything that they're kind of, frankly, learning, internal biases and internal,
Yeah.
things that racism teaches but doesn't necessarily like hammer home as like racism, and that capital R racism.
Yeah.
And there are people who are really trying, but there's like also the people who are just so afraid to offend or so afraid
Yeah.
to hurt, where it's like they don't want to cross a line. And so instead of asking questions or being really engaged or being willing
Yeah.
to like mess up and be corrected, there's a lot of like, let's just play it as safe as possible and
Yeah.
not do that. One thing I see a lot that I can kind of point to, which isn't doesn't have directly do with race or being Latino, but like trans casting. in the industry is a nightmare right now, because when we get sides for that, or when my friends get sides for that, it's like the number one thing they kind of hang on is androgyny. And that's not the trans experience at all. It's never, oh, I exist within two planes. That's how I feel inside, but that's not how I present or how I sound, or my vocal cords are my vocal cords, you know? And so that's really tough. So with anything that comes with identity, there's this kind of push and pull where it's, you know, I put myself forward for as much as humanly possible, because I truly don't believe that there are any small parts. I love what I do, and any opportunity to get to do it is a blessing. But when things come down the line where it's just like, okay, this is the Latino in the pack of six, that's probably what I'm gonna book. But I'm going to put as much work into that as I would into anything else, because you never, I never truly know. And so that's, it can be tough, and it can create this kind of feedback loop of imposter syndrome where it's like, I'm booking and I'm doing well, but it's like you scroll down my IMDb and it's just like Miguel, Diego, Carlos. Okay, all right, there's a pattern surfacing. And it's tough being the best Latino in the room that they could find. And that's kind of a harrowing experience. But I mean, I think it's also, not to ramble on this particular
No,
point too much.
it's beautiful listening to you talk, 'cause you are like, please talk more. You're hitting on a lot of stuff that I think a lot of people can identify with across industries.
Well, it's like there's also this question of like, well, we don't, a lot of us don't have the experience when we first come in. And it's this catch 22 of, well, how do we improve if we're not being hired and gaining, because there's no teaching like learning on the job. You can take as many classes as you want, get private coaching, all that stuff, which is all expensive. Again, we're talking about things that are price gated out of a lot of these, for our community particularly, that stuff is price gated out of our range. So the best way to learn, I've always found, is to learn on the job. I feel like working with Stephanie Shea early on in my dubbing career, my dubbing career, my Englishing not so gooding, working with her early on in my dubbing career made me a better dubber, just because she was so like tactical about how she directed me. And without that, I frankly wouldn't have grown to be as good at my job as I am now. So it's this horrible catch 22 of like, well, we're not very good because we might have raw talent, but we don't have experience. But then how do we get that experience if nobody's taking those chances on us? So it's, I feel like I'm the best I've been at this particular thing since I started, but there's always things I need to learn. And obviously I'm not going to be in that post, I think, that you're referencing. I said, I'm not competing for XYZ Latino talent's job. I'm competing for Troy Baker's job. I'm not anywhere near Troy Baker's level. That man's a monster. I don't know how he does what he does, but like, I just want to know that I can enter the room with him and we have the same level playing field. That's it. You know? And then best guy for the job gets the job, and it's probably try, but like, you know, just that kind of sensibility around it, I guess.
No, and I think that's really important, and I think that is one of the pieces that I'm really happy you touched on, because I think a lot of times we're scared to say that, as Latinos in any profession, as anybody from any underrepresented group. Hell, even somebody who doesn't have a college degree applying for a job that they think, I think that is a universal experience that has very particular things that hit on our experience and our Latinidad. But I think it's beautiful to hear you kind of bring that to the surface and talk about it, because I think when we have opportunities like Don Trail to see, oh my gosh, it's a wonderful cast of characters inspired by Latinos with Latinos playing them. But what's the next step? What is the next role that we can follow these voice actors to? Are they going to, see more after that? And I wanted to ask, do you feel, with responses to your characters, and we can talk about Kona specifically, do you think that that can help open doors, or do you worry that it may be, more typecasting, even though he's a Makote from Turol?
I mean, I hope so, is my honest answer, because I expected, I both expected a lot and expected nothing when I first announced Blanka in Street Fighter 6. Because I was like, wow, a legacy character in a huge franchise, like that's amazing, that's huge. And like I think the most memorable experience I got from that, aside from like doing a couple signings where I got to meet people who were like genuinely excited to meet me, which was amazing. There was a guy at a bar who like bragged to his girlfriend about beating me at the game like 10 seconds after meeting me. And I was like, thanks for the drink, dog. Cool. Appreciate you. which was a humbling experience. But like I think as an actor, especially as a person of color, like you just learn to expect nothing, and then anything that does happen is like cherry on top. Because really the reward is booking the job. Auditioning for the job is the job. And so when you actually get it, that's like that's supposed to be, you know, you can have your cake and eat it too moment. And if it happens to go somewhere after that, cool. But 9 times out of 10, you can never guess any of that stuff. And there's also this fear of like going into it, like, you know, well, I have to be perfect. I can't be fallible. I can't get it wrong. I can't mess this up, because we have that much more of a lens on us at all times for when, you know, if it's, we get the job, great. Well, now you better crush it, because if you don't, you make the entire culture look bad. And that's rough too. So it's, there's more, I think, that I worry about when work finally gets public and goes out than like, that I'm excited for, which is kind of sad and pessimistic to say, but I mean, it's the nature of the acting industry. I think about that poor guy who played Jar Jar Binks, and it's just like, imagine that moment where you're like, I'm gonna be in a Star Wars as like an actual character. I'm gonna be CGI'd to hell out of it, but like, I'm gonna be in Star Wars. And then just the most pan character for like 20 years. I can't imagine the mental like drain that must have had on him. So it's there's it's scary as a performer, frankly. And you never really know.
And I will say, to look at the positive that has come for it, I'm gonna bring up you doing the world a wonderful service in singing Los Orillitas to a scene. And the reason I bring that up is because I think that one of the things that has to, not to downplay anything you're feeling, because I think I feel it every time I write an article and I get an opportunity to interview someone. I'm like, okay, was this good enough? Did I focus too much on the brown person thing? I interviewed Yoshida-san for Don Trail, and I was like, okay, cool, but I made it all about the brown folks. Is this okay? But I think one of the beautiful things that I've seen, and I want to ask, how have you felt the reception has been to Kona more widely? What was, I mean, I cried. I watched the video that somebody put your Los Orillitas track over, and I cried because I saw how perfect it was. And I did want to ask, like, how has the reception been for you, or how have you felt now with your work out there and with fans, you know, not shying away from the fact that, like, no, that this is a Latino brother, and with that's going to come certain feelings. I don't know if that question made any damn sense.
It's about roughly a solid example of what I've been getting online. It's like a lot of gushing and love and like stumbling through stuff, but it's, I mean, it's like I think people are having such a strong reaction because it's so close to home. And so like they have so many words and feelings, they all come out at once. And it's a little overwhelming at times, but it's only because I'm not used to it. But it's also really, really amazing. Like as actors, we operate in a vacuum, and like we don't know, like we work on things for months or years at a time sometimes, and then it's like, well, that was cool. That thing's done now. I remember I cried on the drive home after Kona, which was my final session with Kate and Danny. And that was, that felt like leaving family by the time we were done. And it was this really surreal moment. It was just like, I don't know if I'll ever get to do anything like that again. That was an amazing moment I'll cherish for the rest of my life. And then it came out and people, I mean, flooded me with love. And it was like, wow, you guys care about this so much more than I thought I did. Like that's insane. And like it took like a friend kind of DMing me on the side, like, you know, there are like 30 million concurrent players, right? And I was just like, I didn't know there were that many people in the world. Who cares about anything, frankly? And so it was crazy, and it's been crazy. It's been amazing. I feel like, it's been a thing that I've kind of taken upon myself to make this month where everyone's kind of playing the game and just experiencing the MSQ for the first time. I feel like it's been my job to make that as special for people as possible. So I like, people call it sniping, but I hunt for mentions of Kona. And just usually just like a like on a comment that I think is really cute or a post or whatever, like an encouragement. I see so many people saying like Kona's trans like definitively. And I'm like, yes, absolutely. However you, he's autistic, which I'm on the spectrum. So I'm like, yeah, absolutely. If you see that in that character, if you see yourself in him, my God, man, that's the most beautiful thing I can think of. So just trying to make that this time and that as special for them as possible has been a huge, huge joy. Because it feels like I can kind of give some of that love back. Because for me, I'm just some schmuck in Las Vegas. Like I don't matter much to anybody. I see my nephews and they're just like, yeah, cool. Come over and play Mario with us. We don't care about anything that you're doing right now. You know? But for the fans online, like they're getting noticed by Kona Dontrail. Kona last name Dontrail, canonically. And it's so cool to like have that effect and matter that much to people. And like, I don't know. It just feels like a good way. It feels like a good cathartic feeling to actually be able to give back when
I think this leads me into kind of like my last question. I feel whenever I interview folks who have gotten the opportunity to be a part of an established franchise or bringing, a new character to it and so on and so forth, I always like to ask them what they hope people take away from it, but also if you've thought about what you'd be introducing for new people. Because a lot of people are going to be jumping into Dontrail for the first time, and one of the first characters they're going to get to meet or see is Kona. Have you thought about kind of becoming somebody's Final Fantasy 14 memory?
Oh God, no. That's wild to think of. 'Cause mine was Tidus, and that horrible laugh. But that look, I love that laugh. I will cherish that laugh. They'll never make me hate that laugh. Yeah, man. I mean, if there's one thing I think people could take away from it, it's that the entire, I think, modus operandi, the overarching theme and mission statement of Dontrail is that other cultures and how they're different from our own are beautiful. They're poetic and they're tragic and they're comedic and they're everything that you view in your own home is happening in someone else's home millions and millions of miles away. And there's something incredibly beautiful about that. I don't want to venture t I don't want to say anything that's gonna break the embargo, but I saw a lot of stuff where people were just like, I wish we were following Kona instead of Wuklamot. And I think that's such the wrong message to take away because Wuklamot is this amazing character who is, first of all, like female himbo.
Yo, entirely.
And
That is the
like,
representation we needed in
yeah,
any sort of shonen-inspired
100%. Dumb as rocks, but so handsome and so sweet. And just so earnest and well-intended. I mean, like you should go through this. I think you should go through life with the kind of eyes that Wuklamot has. And to kind of walk in and be willing to fall in love with her culture as not she rediscovers it, but kind of remembers the things that she left behind when she left and now is coming back. Like, I feel like for her, she comes back and the first thing she does is celebrate all these amazing things that she missed when she left. And Kona sees problems to fix. And both of those things are valuable. But I think the ending message of Dontrail is where you find its heart. And that's, it tied up around the people that are in it and how they relate to each other and where culture meets advancement and all of that. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing to kind of explore. So go into it with that respect, and you're gonna have an amazing time. You know, if not, at the very least, I think you get a capybara steed. Like, look forward to that, dude. I don't know. Like, if all that other shit doesn't mean anything, then capybara.